Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1 p.m. and that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is April 10th. And I thought we'd kick off today by looking at a couple of equal weighted indices. So for example, the NASDAQ equal weighted index is at a new all-time high. And that is a very significant development, considering that the majority of people, I think, identify the NASDAQ with the FANG shares, and FANG has not really been doing as well as it had been prior to the big pullback in the fourth quarter. So that has muffled, I think, the performance of the index in absolute terms because it's market cap weighted. But when we start to think about the kinds of shares that are leading higher, for example, Lululemon is one of those. Ulta Beauty has also been doing rather well. Advanced Micro Devices is emblematic of the lift that we're getting from the semiconductors index. So the very fact that the equal weighted index is at a new all-time high, though, is, I think, representative of the fact that we're getting a broad-based recovery. And it's suggestive that we could, in fact, be talking about a successful upward break. If we go back and look at more back history, then we can see that the peak from back in 2007 is rather a long way away, that this index was, in fact, breaking higher in 2011 and 12, quite a bit before the wider market had broken higher in 2013. So there is the potential that it was something of a lead indicator on the initial breakout. But the fact that it is now at a new all-time high is, I think, rather important to highlight. Then when we look at the S&P 500's equal weighted index, it was in negative territory yesterday. It's probably going to be in positive territory when it's calculated in here today, but it's right in the region of the peaks posted back in January and in October. And yes, there is something of a short-term overbought condition, so we may continue to see some pause and consolidation in this region, but we've had a very orderly consolidation right above the region of the trend mean over the course of the last 6 or 7 weeks. So that does improve the potential that we're going to see additional upside. Now, I find this particularly interesting that we're seeing an increasing number of shares that are breaking out to new highs, that very important shares to sentiment, like Amazon, have been doing rather well, and Amazon has been able to push up and out of its range, and it continues to improve upon that performance, albeit not in an especially dynamic manner. It certainly isn't going down. Then when we look at, for example, Google, and that share is right in the region of the $1,200 area, so it is above the peak posted back in January, but below the one posted in the middle of the year. So that's also rather important, that these iconic shares continue to at least hold their gains. Then Microsoft, which really hadn't pulled back to any measurable extent relative to the kind of pullback we saw in other shares, continues to extend its advance to new highs. Well, that's also representative of the continued demand, and I think benefit of the doubt, that investors are willing to give to subscription-oriented businesses. Then, of course, among those subscription-oriented businesses, it would be nice if they also do make profits. Well, Netflix was in mildly negative territory in here today, and it has been range-bound for almost 3 months already. The sequence of lower rally highs remains intact. And there is scope here for additional volatility, not least as increasing competition starts to come through in this sector. Disney, for example, continues to march back up towards the upper side of what is almost a full four-year range, and there is a clear progression of higher reaction lows within it. There is, I think, clear potential that Disney is going to outperform Netflix over the course of the next few months. But all of this is happening against a background where I'm seeing an increasing number of reports that are exhibiting phenomenally bearish prognostications. I'm going to post one of those in here today. And people are getting really quite vocal about the debt problems, the fact that the USA is running pro-cyclical monetary and fiscal policy, and that it's all going to eventually end in tears. But when we look at yields, then they're not exhibiting the kind of selling pressure that they would be if people were really worried about a buyer strike in the debt markets. If we go and look at the weekly chart, well, we can see that there is a clear failed break above 3%, and the dynamic of the failure is larger than the dynamic of the breakout. We've had something of a reversionary rally. At least the yield had popped back up to test the lower side of the overhead trading range. It hadn't been able to hold it though, and we're starting to see it re with retreating again now. One of the rules of thumb from the chart seminar is that if the dynamic of the breakout is smaller than the dynamic of the breakdown, then there's a good chance you're going to see the price come back down and test the lower side of the range. Well, the lower side of the range is 1.5%, and what that's very clearly starting to price in is that bond investors have concluded that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, and that the most likely scenario is that we're going to see rate cuts from here. The 2-year yield was close to 3% in November, and it is at 2.3% today. So we've had a very significant contraction. The yield did pop off the bottom of the day's range in here today, but this is still also right in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range. It's an I think a clear area where we can anticipate that there's going to be some support coming through. Well, what that I think suggests when we start to take into account that stock markets are potentially on the cusp of breaking higher on in nominal terms, and that equal weighted indices are outperforming right now. Well, against a background then when the bond market has concluded that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, then that does suggest that there's potential here that we are in the third psychological perception stage of the bull market, and that is often characterized by acceleration or a mania. And if we start to see some of the cash on the sidelines coming back into the market, then that is likely to stoke interest in the stock markets again. Well, when we then go and look around the world, the A-share index is, I think, rather a barometer of risk appetite in China, and the Chinese government are extending credit to the markets once more. They have basically declared victory in their campaign to contain the shadow banking sector. Now they're ordering the banks to extend more credit to the corporate sector, and that is obviously one of the factors in the outperformance of the A-share index right now. When we look at the H-share index in Hong Kong, then it was off its lows in here today, and it remains on a recovery trajectory. The change of heart and the direction of policy in China is an enormously important development for the global economy because it's likely to stoke growth and demand everywhere else, and that's particularly the case in Europe. One of the reasons why Mario Draghi can turn around and say that he does not anticipate there to be a recession in the Eurozone, despite the fact that Italy is just about there already, and that manufacturing in Germany has been contracting, and that leading indicators have been pointing towards slower growth. Well, the reason that they feel reasonably confident they can avoid a recession is because of China. That if China is stimulating, then that is going to create demand for European exports, and that is what the Europeans are in fact banking on. Well, The fact that the Euro stocks has held this sequence of high reaction lows since Boxing Day, that it is now back above the trend mean, that's rather important. In fact, the Euro stocks index is outperforming the DAX, which is home to some of its largest constituents. The DAX index is still below this 12,000 level. I think it is going to be a matter of confidence boost. It will be a confidence boosting exercise if the index can sustain a move back above the 12,000 level. Then when we look at the MDAX, it has been able to push up and through that psychological 25,000 level. So at least that is holding out the potential that the DAX can also start to move back towards a recovery kind of scenario. Then when we look at the European banking sector, I think it's important to remember that there are only two listed German banks, and the size are their relative weightings within the index is considerably smaller than it used to be. The index itself is dominated by French and Spanish banks, so I think that's a rather important point as well. It's right in the region of the trend mean. If it can sustain a move back above 100, well, then we can start to think about recovery beyond short-term steadying. Against a background where the world is pinning its hopes on China's reflation and the fact that the Federal Reserve is at the top of the interest rate cycle, then that should generally be positive for the commodities complex. Gold prices were in mildly positive territory in here today, but this is stringing together days on the upside now. We have had a couple of downward dynamics in March, and that has acted as a break on speculative interest, but it is bouncing from the region of the trend mean. This does look like a consolidation. If it can push up and through the 1370 area, well, then we'll be talking about recovery and a potentially even a breakout from what is a more than 6 year range. Then platinum prices, it did break out of their little range on Friday and we're in positive territory in here today, up $7. This does look like a clear upward break, and so far it has been sustained. It, I think, increases the potential that we're going to see a run back towards 1,000 and potentially even up towards 1,200 over the course of the next few months if we do in fact get greater interest coming through in terms of precious metal in markets. Then the copper price was a little negative in here today. Sorry, that is not the copper price. I pressed the wrong yellow key. When we look at copper, it was in negative territory in here today, but it is still looking like a little first step above the base. There is clear potential here that we are going to see additional upside in a number of the industrial resources if we do, in fact, get a reflation trade starting to come through in terms of the global economy. That's also being reflected in the oil price, which was up another dollar in here today. We are approaching the first area of potential resistance around the 72.50 area, which is less than a dollar away right now. It has paused at these increments, paused at 62.50, then it paused at 67.50, and now it's coming up towards the next potential area of resistance. A reaction of more than $7 would really be required to question that this isn't still a reasonably consistent advance. Something that we do see with oil prices is that they are capable of putting in these reasonably short-term consistent moves. Generally, then, when it becomes less consistent, it becomes a lot more difficult to make money from. Then, of course, the reality is that $85 represents a very significant level because it's where a great deal of additional supply starts to become profitable. But that doesn't factor in at present because there's a clear backwardation where the June 19 contract is trading at $71 and March 21 is at 65. So there isn't a great deal of incentive to go out and start drilling and hedging by selling futures when you are getting a negative carry. And it's not really until you start to see a change in that environment, that would then start to act as a headwind to the oil price. So I do think that there's scope here for some additional upside. I've been thinking a lot about Africa, and there is going to be an interesting IPO coming up with Jumbia. That would be a potential avenue for consumers or for investors to get access to African consumers. What I find also interesting is that it's not simply that Amazon has been doing better, but Mercado Libre has had a very impressive breakout over the course of the last 6 weeks, and it is definitely overbought in the short term, but neither is this advance yet over. And that would be considered the Amazon of Latin America. When we look at Alibaba, it's been consolidating above its trend mean. Again, sorry, I really need to put some stickers on my keyboard. That's Alibaba, and it is doing better than it has done in really quite some time by consolidating above the trend mean. JD.com has certainly been in the news over the course of the last year, and not for the best of reasons, but it has broken its downtrend and it is back above the trend mean. Baidu is not in the e-commerce market, but it is right around this 150 area, and tested the region of the trend mean in here this week. The extent to which it can hold on to this advance is now going to be the arbiter of whether we are in a recovery scenario for this particular share. So we can see that a number of the e-commerce companies continue to do well, and that is supportive of the view that the global consumer is still in reasonably good health. And against a background where there is scope for additional monetary and fiscal largesse, then that does support the potential that we are going to see additional upside in stock markets. I think there are two important points. One is that the yield curve spread did not invert, at least not yet. And even when it does invert, and it does look likely it's going to invert sooner or later, then we get a lead indicator of anything from 6 to 18 months out from to the beginning of the next recession. Even though we've had an inversion of the 3 month and the 10 year, that generally offers a much lengthier lead indicator to the beginning of a recession. So that would suggest that we still have a good bit of time before that deleterious outcome eventually rears its head. Then we also know that once the yield curve becomes inverted, that generally starts to get people, generally speaking, you get exactly what we're getting right now, which is a discussion about whether it is efficacious or not on this occasion, and people pointing out that it's not as good a lead indicator as everyone thinks it is. This is exactly the same thing that we had back in 2006 and 2007. Then people generally tend to forget about it because stock markets continue higher. What happens usually is that central banks go on pause, which is exactly what's happening now. And stock markets respond to that by thinking, well, growth is still doing well, the stock market has been doing well, and the Federal Reserve is no longer raising interest rates, so there isn't going to be an increasing headwind, and that generally leads itself to additional upside. And it's only after you've had additional upside, usually led by cyclical sectors, and the return to performance of the mining sector is representative of a return to performance by cyclical sectors. It's usually after they've had a really impressive move, and arguably this one is only just starting, then that's when you start to get to the lead edge of a recession. So We're just not there yet. Now, there are a lot of arguments about why bond yields will not go down in the next crisis, but in fact would rise because of a buyer's strike and very clear fears about the sustainability of the environment overall for debt. But we just don't have evidence of that right now. Bond yields are contracting, and when we look at the high yield sector, the spreads have been contracting. They're down around 3.75%. The high yield market has been rebounding. It was in additional positive territory in here today, but it is now breaking the sequence of lower rally highs, and that's a very important development. That is really quite supportive of continued credit growth and less risk being priced into the bond markets generally. That doesn't mean that we're not going to have a problem in future. It doesn't mean that the debt issues that have been brought to light over the course of the last 6 months aren't relevant, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to become a really big flashpoint now. And I think that's perhaps the more important point. The fact that gold prices and the resources sector are beginning to perform, well, that is supportive of the view we are in the latter stages of a cyclical advance. But we are in a secular bull market, and technological innovation and the rise of the global consumer are really very powerful forces. What I found particularly interesting in the last couple of days was the interview that Ray Dalio gave on CNBC, where he was getting a lot of pushback on his view that it's possible to fix the equal opportunities problems that, for example, in Connecticut, with public-private partnerships, and that you get a net positive outcome by investing in education. And I found that particularly interesting, is that he is doing his best to shout from the rooftops that there is a problem evolving, and there is nobody listening. And I think that is one of the clearest signs that we have, that people don't question a winning strategy until it has been demonstrated to fail. And that is exactly what we have right now, that with the rise of populism, and that is a direct response to the inequality that has arisen, then that is going to have to be seen to fail during a crisis before people really start to consider what to do about it. And it is a risky business, because there is obviously a number of potential outcomes, and not all of them are positive. So that is obviously the reason why Ray Dalio is spending so much time to promote his vision for what could be a potential outcome, but it is by no means the only potential outcome. Then I think when we look at the fact that we are reasonably late in the cyclical bull market, although there is certainly a risk for additional upside in here. Well, the underperformance of Lyft, where the share was down $7 in here today, that is obviously going to be a cautionary note for Uber's IPO. The fact that Pinterest is going for an IPO, and that a significant number of additional unicorns are lining up to come to market, well, they're probably going to come in at rich valuations. And for example, we've already seen that Lyft is down really quite significantly over the course of the last 10 sessions. I think there's a strong likelihood that at least one of these ride-sharing companies is going to go bust eventually, when the willingness of investors to continue to extend credit to them eventually runs dry, because they have very little prospect of ever making a profit. And that's particularly true when you have companies like Google that are leading the way in terms of autonomous driving. There is no way that these companies are going to ever get to a profit without ditching their drivers. And that's an enormously difficult prospect. Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.